Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Anna's Journey here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your show's host, Anna Renault, and I always ask my listeners to please go to my website, annarenault.com, look up the information, find out who I am, what I do, and more information about the radio shows. I also remind people that the shows are recorded, so if you are listening and you miss something, you can go back and listen to it again. You can also share the link with family, friends, and neighbors, or anybody that you think might be interested in the topics that we're talking about. It is always interesting with some of my guests, with the information, their small business, the services that they are providing to people, and make such a big difference. Now, before I jump into the show, I also announce my airtime sponsor, and for October, that is Ginny Robertson, LLC. Ginny is an entrepreneur who has a fantastic networking organization for women. We have face-to-face meetings around the state here in Maryland and one in Virginia. But Ginny has also started to have online meetings, teleconferences, 3 a month for members and 1 a month for her global group. She also has Facebook pages, 1 for the members and 1 for the global group. Any women can join. She also has a on-purpose woman magazine that she publishes. It has been on hiatus. I believe she was looking at printers and different things. And the next issue is due out here shortly. Check out Ginny's website, GinnyRobertson.com. And I give a big shout out to Ginny for introducing me to today's guest, Laura Johnson, who is the owner of Hummingbird Wealth Management. And I know for a fact that I love talking about money and hearing people talk about money, especially smart tips of things that we should be doing with the money that we earn, that we save, that we spend. Now, one last big announcement before we jump into the show. With the tragedies that are occurring around the country, certainly in the southeast with Hurricane Irma, in the southwest with Hurricane Harvey, the northwest with all the fires, we really need to increase blood donations. All these tragedies have really stopped the Red Cross from getting blood donations. It is a critical need that is always ongoing, but certainly bigger and more needed now with these prices. So go to redcross.org/give, G-I-V-E, hyphen blood, B-L-O-O-D, and see if there is a blood collection somewhere in your neighborhood. Now, the Red Cross has been getting some bad press. They have not been well organized within the hurricanes in terms of supply and relief. However, their blood donations and blood distribution is unprecedentedly good without question all around the world. So think about giving blood if you can't do much of anything else. Okay, let's see if I can get my computer to cooperate this morning. Good morning, Laura Johnson. How are you today?
Good morning, Anna. I'm wonderful. How are you this morning?
I am so happy to see the sun shining and that we did not get the expected downpour of rain from the outer bands left over from Irma, because we got some really heavy downpour rains with the outer bands of Harvey, and I really did not want to see us have that repeated, and yet we really can't complain considering what Texas and the southeast and southwest folks got in terms of their rainfall. So I'm happy. I really, really am happy because, first of all, I live on a peninsula, so we have a high water table anyway. Water does not perk into the ground quickly. So we get a heavy rainstorm, we have mud puddles for a week or two.
Nowhere to go.
Nope, there isn't. You know, it's really amazing sometimes when people don't think about where the floodplain really is. And people talk about, well, I want to fill in this gully, and this is just a dry riverbed. Let's fill that in. And then next thing you know, in my case, we had Hurricane Isabel in 2003. And that dry gulch behind my brother's house that is normally 12, 13 feet deep had 11 feet of water in it. And I said, well, be glad you're not paying taxes on waterfront property. Since you don't have waterfront all the time. But he could literally sit on his back porch and fish for a month because we had 11 foot of water come up that dry gulch, which is part of the floodplain. There's a reason that was there. So, Laura, this is show number 4 for us. This has been awesome. People keep asking, first of all, how I find you. Find people like you, guests that can share all this information. But then they ask me questions that I keep saying, call Miss Johnson. She knows all this stuff. I don't. I'm just the conduit that can share it. So tell people just a little bit about who you are and about Hummingbird.
Well, sure. So Hummingbird Wealth Management, we are a wealth management or investment management and financial planning firm. And what we really specialize in is relationships. I've been in this business of helping my clients achieve goals, whether it be retirement or college planning or downsizing or going through a divorce or widowhood for 23 years. And I really find that, you know, getting to know my clients on a personal level, finding out where they've been and in their life, both financially and emotionally, as well as where they are today. But then most importantly is, well, where do you want to go tomorrow? What are your future goals and dreams? And then just making sure that your financial picture, whether that be your investments, your retirement plan, your estate plan, your insurance plan, whatever it might be, is all in line with what it is you want to accomplish with the rest of your life. And then we just work together and build that relationship because, you know, as we all know, you know, where we are today is very different from where we were, you know, even a year ago or 3 years ago and potentially where we're going to be in the future. And so things are constantly changing. And I ensure that, you know, we're having a regular relationship to be able to uphold and maintain our plan. So that if things come at us from out in left field, you know, an early retirement that we weren't planning for, an illness that we weren't planning for, at least we have some kind of plan to be able to work from and build on and modify as needed as we go through life.
I know certainly everything you just said has certainly been key factors in my life, which was also one of the big reasons I really wanted to have these shows, because if somebody hadn't sat me down way back when and said, what are you doing about this? What are you doing about that? I would not have been able to retire at the age of 51. I would not be where I am today at 67. And people don't seem to get it. They really, I'll worry about that later. You may or may not have later to worry about. You know, in my case, my first cancer, I was 27. I didn't know how much of a future I had, but I had a child, and I had to worry about that kind of stuff. And that kind of leads us into what today's topic was, and that is estate planning, preserving our wealth for our heirs. What do we have? What can we afford to do? What should we be looking at to see that we can afford to do? We have certainly talked about taking control, doing some financial strategies, especially for women. We've talked about some retirement issues. We certainly talked, I believe, last time about divorce issues. These are things that sometimes we have no way of predicting, but certainly having that financial plan, at least in my opinion, can settle down your stomach, your worries, you know, staying up all night worrying about things, because you have a plan. So where do you want to jump in here with estate planning and whatever topics you wanted to talk about today?
Well, I think for me, Anna, it's important to explain to people what estate planning is. And just simply put, it is making sure that if something happens to you, and it's not just about if you pass away, but it's also almost on a more important level is if you don't pass away, but you're incapable of handling your financial affairs, what documents have you put in place to make sure that life continues? You know, while you're in the hospital, your bills are being paid, so your house isn't being foreclosed upon, or that there's your wishes are known. And I think sometimes it's best to learn by telling stories. So one of my stories in regards to estate planning actually involves my grandmother. When my grandmother passed away, she had a will. And God bless my grandmother. She was the most wonderful, wonderful woman in the world as far as I'm concerned. And she had four beautiful children. And so in her infinite wisdom, she left all of her assets equally to her four children. So this is a woman who had thought about it and said, you know what, I love each one of my children equally, and I want all four of them to have it. The issue with my grandmother's will is that she had not communicated clearly to her family what her wishes were verbally. And so it's not just about having those documents. It's also about sharing and communicating what those documents are, where they are, and what they meant and what their intentions were. And so often I see this, that yes, there's a will, but because there was some kind of lack of communication, there becomes some disagreements and arguments amongst those who are the beneficiaries as to what was the real intent behind what was written in the will. So in my grandmother's case, she actually left some financial assets, but her primary asset was her condominium that she owned at the beach. And of the four children, there was only one child that really wanted that condominium. And my grandmother's intention was that, well, somehow it would be figured out. This was a conversation she and I had, that somehow it'll be figured out, that the four children will figure out how that one child can get it and then somehow evenly distribute the rest of the assets. Well, that wasn't really what was understood by the four children. And it ended up creating a little turmoil to the extent that, unfortunately, those kids don't talk to each other. And we're not talking about children. Mm. We're talking about men and women in their 60s and 70s are no longer talking to each other, all over a stupid piece of property. And I see this many times, unfortunately. And one of the things that I encourage my clients to do is, yes, the document is very important. So if you don't have your documents, I mean, you don't want the state that you live in deciding who's going to get your assets. And I'm not sure about all states, but I do know in the state of Maryland that if someone dies intestate, which is without a will, what ends up happening is the state says, okay, do you have a spouse? Do you have children? Do you have siblings? And do you have parents? And if the answer to any of those is yes, you've now created the list of your beneficiaries. Then the state decides who gets what and how much. And I'm not sure about you, but I'm not real interested in a government telling me what or telling my family what it is of mine they're going to get. So that's why a will is important. But going back to the story of once you have the will, why it's so important to communicate, and I mentioned that, but one of the things I encourage my clients to do is once you've done the document, sit down with your beneficiaries, which is typically your children, and explain, this is what I've decided and why. And in the sessions that I've had with my clients, it's very interesting because I do have some occasions where I will coordinate for my clients to sit down and talk about the will. And it's never fun because the children pop up and say, oh, my gosh, Mom, is there something wrong with you? Are you dying? And yeah. So we have to settle them, you know, we have to settle them down. But it's always a very enlightening process to sit down and talk about what that person has put in their will and why. And I actually had a client that in her will, because of her culture, she left all of her very valuable things to her eldest child. And one of the items was a beautiful vase that she had that had been passed down through the family for hundreds of years. And when we mentioned, when we talked about this in our meeting, that this item was going to go to her eldest child, her eldest child made a face that obviously nobody's going to see on this radio show, but I can just tell you she made a face that it was just like, oh, really? And I stopped the
meeting. Like, I really don't want that. Why give it to me?
Yes. Yeah, so I stopped the meeting, and we had a conversation about it. And what came of that, which was very interesting, was the eldest child didn't want this. She wanted something else. But the second child was very interested in this item. And it opened up the communication, and what it did is prevented what would happen when this person passed away. Because one person wanted it, but somebody else was getting it. And I'm sure it would have created some kind of turmoil upon her passing. And we fixed it, and we corrected it. Now, that doesn't mean it's going, you know, having these communications isn't going to prevent, you know, some kind of turmoil, because we have lost someone we loved, and that creates a natural, you know, feeling of anger and being upset, absolutely. But I think that communication is important. But if anybody gleans anything from this conversation, is please make sure you have your documents. You don't want someone who's unrelated to the family, specifically a governmental agency, deciding for you. But secondly, what's most important is to communicate. Now, I can continue because there's so much more to estate planning besides the will. Everybody, when they think about estate planning, they think, oh, this is what's going to happen when I pass away. And there are two other documents, and we have talked so much, the two of us, Anna, about what these two documents are. And one of them is a durable power of attorney. And the second one is a health care directive. It's also known as a living will. And these two documents are important because they are the documents that say, what's going to happen while I'm alive? What if I'm in an accident, a car accident, and I am in a coma, and I'm unable to answer for myself? What kind of life-saving efforts do I want to have to keep me alive? And who's going to be paying my bills while I am alive to ensure that, again, the creditors aren't coming and knocking down the doors and taking everything I have? And so these two documents, normally when you go to see an estate planning attorney, they are going to ensure that you have all three documents, the will, the durable power of attorney, and the health care directive. We've heard many stories in the news, at least in my lifetime, about people that are on life support for 10 or 15 years because there was nothing left behind to say, this is not how I want to live. And that's something that is very, very important. And the last thing I'm going to say real quick before I have you see if you have a question for me is these documents are worthless if they're sitting in your drawer in your office and nobody knows about them. It's so important that you make sure that the people who are named, either as executor, as the person with the power on the power of attorney, or the person who's a decision maker on the health care directive, actually has a copy or knows where to obtain a copy, but also is aware of your wishes. And that's where that communication piece becomes so vitally important. And I think I'll stop there, see what question you have for me.
Well, I have questions, I have comments, I have stories, I have all that. Because you brought out so many important topics, so many important issues. As you say, when somebody dies, sometimes it brings out the monster in people. I can remember my grandfather dying here in my house, in my bathroom. It was my parents' house. It was the day Kennedy died. The world was going crazy. Everybody was sitting around crying anyway. And then my grandfather passes away. Well, the oldest son had always been told that he was going to inherit his parents' bedroom set. It was one of those deals where it had been handed down. First of all, it was handmade. Second of all, it had been handed down from the great-great-grandparents and whatever. So my grandfather dies. Before the funeral was even held, my uncle is knocking on the front door demanding the bedroom set.
Mm.
Now, for most people, that wouldn't be a big deal, except for that his mother was still alive, still sleeping in the bed. And my father, who said to his older brother, "And what do you want us to do with Mom? You know, you want her to sleep on the floor? Do you want us to buy her a new bed? You know, this has been her bedroom set since she got married. She's now, you know, 80 years old. She has been sleeping in this bed for more than 50 years, almost 60 years. Actually, I guess it was 60, because she was 16 when she got married. So, you know, what are we going to do with Mom? Yes, you will get the bedroom set, but not until your mother passes. You know, I mean, hello. Unbelievable. My father was a fairly meek and mild kind of guy. He literally picked up his brother by the scruff of his neck and the belt loops of his pants and threw him out the front door and said, you know, don't cross my door path again when you're that uncaring about your mother, you know, and where she's going to sleep. Well, of course, my grandmother didn't want anybody to be upset, and so she called one of her daughters and said, "Can I move in with you?" And, you know, trying to make her eldest son happy and all this kind of stuff. I mean, there were some really bad, hard feelings that rippled through the whole family. You know, there were those that were taking my uncle's side. Well, he was the inheritant, you know. But what about your mother, you know? The other story involves my granddaughter's other grandmother. She lived with her mother, who was also elderly. She drove her to the store, to the doctor, wherever. Everybody, including me, who was not technically a family member on that side, knew that that woman said that Barbara would inherit the car. It was an old car. It wasn't worth all that much, but you know, Barbara didn't have a car. She was going to inherit Grandmom's car. Well, the grandmother passes away. Barbara takes the car. Her sister has her charged with grand theft auto. She wanted the car. They wound up going to court. The judge said, sell everything and split the money. So while one wanted the diamond ring and one wanted the car, they got nothing. They had to sell everything, split the money. They got really nothing of value, not the value that they should have gotten. If one had just said, you take this, I'll take that, go our happy way. Nope, nope. One of them had to be greedy. She wanted. And it was like, you know, this is the kind of stuff that you would hear at somebody's birthday party or the picnic or whatever, that Grandmom said Barbara could have the car. We all knew it, you know, but it wasn't in writing. And the two sisters wound up charging each other with theft, and the judge said, sell it. I mean, death can be so crazy with people. It really can. You mentioned people that are in comas. Sometimes those people do wake up. So who has taken care of the estate while this person is still on life support? What happens if this person doesn't die and does wake up? I know myself in 2009, I had two surgeries instead of one, and I had to turn over some of my bills to my granddaughter who co-owns the house. And I said, I'm just not able to take care of this right now. You're going to have to start taking care of some of these bills. Now, we split the cost. But it was a matter of making sure the money got to the electric company, got to the phone company. Putting it in my bank account doesn't do any good. And that's where sometimes power of attorney comes in. Who can get into my checking account? In 2015, I updated my will because in 2005 we thought I was going to die. Well, here it is 2015, I'm sick again, they don't think I'm going to see Christmas, I update the paperwork, and I gave a copy to my granddaughter and said, put this in your little safe, your metal box, whatever. And she said, why are you giving it to me? Well, I'm not going to need it. If I'm dead, you need it, not me. And again, that conversation nobody wants to have. We are all going to die sometime, somewhere, somehow. We don't get out of this world alive. And you need to have these conversations, and you need to have those pieces of paper in place. What would happen, and I said this to my granddaughter and her husband, I'm going to die at some point, sooner or later, and you guys are going to inherit the house. You already co-own it. Your name's already on the deed. You're going to co-own the house. Can you, I mean, you're going to own it outright. Can you afford it? Without me paying half of everything? It's all well and good that you're going to inherit, but can you afford it? That's a big question, in my opinion. And it certainly was a bigger question on them. You could see their eyes like, oh, that's a good question. Can we? Mm-hmm. You know, do we have enough income to handle the whole thing without help? These are some serious questions that it's so good to hear you are talking with your customers, your clients, about how to make ends meet or who's going to handle things to make sure ends meet. Whether you're dead or you're still alive, certainly car accidents happen all the time. We've certainly seen with these hurricanes, these people's lives are not just trashed in terms of the physical damage, but the emotional damage. Mm-hmm. Do they have access to their money? Do they have copies of any of their important papers? What do you recommend in terms of once you have these papers and you do share them with people? Now, in my case, I could share it with my sister and my brother and I, but we all live in the same neighborhood, so if we all get flooded, who should have a copy of my paperwork?
So what I recommend, and actually with the, I'm going to start with the power of attorney. What a lot of people don't know is that powers of attorney can become stale documents. And what I mean by that is, you know, let's say, Anna, you name me as your power of attorney, and you're fine, and everything's going wonderfully, and we don't do anything with the document, but 7 years from now, you take ill and you're unable to handle your financial affairs. And I say, okay, I grab your power of attorney document and I take it into the bank and I say, okay, Anna has named me as her power of attorney. I need to have access to her account so I can start paying her bills for her. The bank in that instance most likely is going to turn me away. And the reason being is because they have no way of knowing in the last 7 years if you have changed your mind about who your power of attorney is. They have a fiduciary responsibility to you, and if they have no way of confirming or verifying the information in the document I'm providing, they're going to turn me away, and then I'm going to be unable to do what you asked me to do. So with the case of the power of attorney, I completely recommend and encourage people to give a copy of that immediately to your financial people. So whether that be your investment firm, your 401k people, and your bank. So that way, when something happens or if something happens, they already know. They already have a copy of the document, and they already have the power of attorney in place. In regards to your will and your advance directive, typically your attorney itself, who is the person who actually drew up the documents. I don't draw these documents up for my clients. I am not an attorney by any way, shape, or form. But when an attorney draws the documents up, they will typically keep copies of those as well. The next person I would say would be the persons that you name in the document. So in the case of your will, and this is a good time to make this point, just because you name your sister as an example as your executor in your will doesn't mean that same person is necessarily your power of attorney or the power in your health care directive. They are totally different roles in each one of these documents, and each one of us has different personalities. And I know for a fact I could handle the financial side of handling my parents' estate, and I could also handle the financial side of operating their power of attorney.
But to make that decision, even though that they've already made it for me, to be the person that says, yeah, go ahead and turn the machines off for my mom and dad, I'm too emotional. There's no way I could do that. So I just wanted to make that point. They don't always have to be the
same
person.
That's a very good point, because I had that conversation with my granddaughter and her husband when I gave them my will and my power of attorney and my advance directive, because I named my grandson-in-law in the advance directive because I know my granddaughter would not be able to make that decision. And I had that conversation with them in terms of, when I get to a certain point, if I need nursing care, I don't expect one of them to stay home and take care of me. They have their life to live. They're right now going to be 30 soon. But they still have their whole life ahead of them. They can't be quitting work to take care of me. It might be 5 years, it might be 10 years, whatever. I need to go into a nursing home. You need to put me in a nursing home. The decision is made, no ands, no buts. And it's a tough decision. I've seen some of my cousins who have quit working to stay home and take care of their mom. You can't do it 24/7. You need help.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody
mm-hmm.
needs to be awake at night when grandmom is wandering around the house or needs to get up and go to the potty or whatever. My cousin is 72. Her mother is 90. She was up wandering around, fell and broke her leg. Well, my cousin had to be asleep. At some point in time, she has to close her eyes and go to sleep. These things happen, and families need to be prepared. And they're not. They're often not even willing to talk about it. Like when I gave the will to my granddaughter, she said, I don't want to talk about this right now. You might not want to talk about it right now, but you're going to listen. And then when you're ready to talk, we'll sit down and meet again. Because I am going to die, probably before her. Maybe not, but probably. That's, kind of the given, since I'm sitting here with cancer. But, it's not an easy conversation. But we need to have those conversations. And to have somebody like you who... I can't say that you're unemotional, but you're certainly not directly impacted by my passing or my granddaughter inheriting or whatever. You do need, and you made a good point about not having the same person make these different decisions. Who is capable of doing the financial side? Who is smart enough or knows enough about medical of what decisions to make? Yes, go ahead and do the surgery. No, she doesn't want to do that. This is in her advance directive. And I've said to most of my family, if not all of my family, when the time comes, let me go. I've lived my life up to this point, and the Lord says it's time. It's time. Let me go. I don't want to. Because I told them I'd come back and haunt them if they don't follow my directive.
And we can do that, right?
I like to think I can do anything, But these are some important things that we need to think about. And we certainly need to talk about. And we certainly need our families more or less to cooperate, We will be dead. We may or may not have any control over it. We may or may not be able to haunt them. But I think it would be so much easier, especially for my granddaughter and probably even my daughter, to not have to make that decision. Never put me on the breathing machine, on the life support, and then you won't have to make the decision about turning it off. Don't ever put me on it. Don't let me lay there for days, weeks, whatever, to see if I get better. No. When the heart decides to stop, let me go. To me, that just makes it easier for everybody that gets left behind. Because you're the person that's dying. You're not the one that's going to be left with all the fallout, like you said. Who's going to pay the bills? Who's going to take care of the estate? Who's going to go to the bank? I thought that was a great idea about giving a copy of your power of attorney to your bank. That was not something I have done. My attorney has copies. I have one of those bank vault things. What do you call them? The drawer at the bank where you
keep your... Safe deposit box, yeah.
Safe deposit box. I have had a house fire. Fortunately, my metal box under the bed did really good. The top paper was ash, and everything else underneath survived. You know, my insurance policy and everything. Those fireproof boxes are really, really good to have. And you just don't know when you're going to need them. You really don't. I mean,
no.
These are some important things. And like you said, the misunderstanding about who was going to inherit that vase. That was the problem with the other grandmother and her sister. Barbara should have gotten the car. The other sister should have gotten the ring. Everybody should have been happy. And nobody got really much of anything. And what a shame that they, you know, that the grandmother hadn't put it in writing that, you know, one was greedier than the other. And it was just really bad karma all the way around. And it happened. These are just a couple of the stories you have. I know I probably have six or eight more that I've seen just in my father's family. There were eight adult children. And no matter which one of the spouses died first, it was never an easy, smooth transition. My dad had been dead, I think, 9 years when my mother decided to get remarried. Both of them, my mother and my stepfather, were in their 70s. And I kept saying, do you have it in writing? Do you have it in writing? What's his family getting? What's your family getting? You know, these blended families create issues. And then if you have one spouse that is buried, where are you going to be buried? Are you going to be buried to the spouse you were married to for 52 years? Or are you going to be married to the new wife that you've only had for 11 months? You know, these are some tough conversations. And they need to be had. They really do. And go ahead. Do you have something to say about some of that?
Well, no. I mean, the only thing I wanted to add is that, you know, we're sitting here and talking about documents. And I actually had an experience where for the first time in my life, I had to go help with a funeral planning. And so this is just another piece of it. And there are actually organizations and companies out there that will help you plan your funeral while you're alive. And that I really encourage people to do that. And, again, a lot of people, oh, that's so morbid. Why are we talking about planning my funeral? Well, you know, it's taking, again, the burden off of the people you've left behind. And while it's uncomfortable at some point to do some of these things, you don't see it, but we all see it. And we are all mourning and we're crying. And to stop and have to handle, you know, minute details and you know, what kind of coffin would mom want? What kind of flowers would mom want? What kind of music would mom want? Does she want a service? Does she want an open casket? I mean, all of those things are, you know, we're left going, I don't know. Did anybody talk to mom about this? And, you know, it just, and then it becomes stressful. And then people start to argue, no, mom's favorite color was red, not pink. And it just adds to the turmoil. And really what I try to tell people is when you pass away, here's what you should do. Put your children, your beneficiaries, your loved ones in the position to mourn. And that's it. Just let them mourn. Don't put them in a position where they're having to run to the bank and having to argue with another beneficiary about, no, you can't take that piece of furniture out of my house like you were put in that position. One of the things actually I do recommend considering is a lot of people, when they think about their will, they look at their executor as possibly being, you know, their oldest child or their sister or some relative. I discourage that. And the reason I discourage that is exactly what I just said, is that those people are they're in a position where they're not allowed to mourn as long as everyone else because they have responsibilities.
Mourned at all. You know,
exactly.
You have to go to the funeral parlor. You have to make these decisions. My mother, I think we have convinced overly planning. I think she has every little single detail. We have nothing that we can decide because she's already been to the funeral parlor. She's already told them exactly what she wants, including the little gift, the little prayer cards, which picture she wants on the prayer cards. I mean, every little detail. Plus, it's all prepaid. So we have none of the financial problem. And I did the same thing. I came close to dying on the operating table back in 05. So when I had to have the surgery again the same year, I prepaid my funeral. I didn't think I was going to come home. And, you know, I also happen to go to church every Sunday where some of my family doesn't. What do they know that I want? Do I want a funeral mass? And like you said, music and all that stuff. What do I want? So I did all that in 05. When I got so sick in 2015 and it looked like, okay, this time I am going to die, I upgraded. I mean, I updated all that info. And it's not an easy conversation with the family. But, again, what do they know about what I want? Or even what's available, you know, in the Catholic Church these days. I think my sister goes to a Methodist church. What do they offer versus the Catholic Church? You know, who knows what? Who's going to talk to who? Who do you contact? You know, so I sat down with my priest. I've sat down with my attorney. I've sat down with my banker. I've updated all these papers. Now, you said give a copy to your bank, your power of attorney. Should you update that on an annual or biannual basis or something? Or just once you give it to them, they figure?
Yeah. Typically, they accept what you've given, and there's an assumption that if any change needs to be made, you will let them know. I will tell you that's one of the things any good financial advisor, though, is going to review with you on a regular basis. And by regular, I mean at least annually. And that's one of the things I offer my clients. I make sure that I review the beneficiaries that we've placed on their accounts. But I also ask them about, okay, when was the last time you read your will? When was the last time you read your power of attorney and your health care directive? And when was the last time it was updated? Because not only do things change in your life, but also things change in the legal world as well. So sometimes a document that was created 15, 20 years ago, while it might say what you want it to say, legally it might have some loopholes in it that you don't want it to have. And that's why I recommend that your attorney review your documents at least every 5 to 7 years. I think that's very important.
It was interesting. There was an article in the news not too long ago. A woman and her father arranged to have her husband killed so she could inherit all this money. Well, they arranged it. The guy was killed. And come to find out, he had never changed the beneficiary on his insurance, and the ex-wife got everything. I mean, you don't always know or think about the beneficiaries. Laura, give your contact information real quick. We've run over time again, and the computer's going to shut us down.
Okay. My name is Laura Johnson. My website's www.hummingbirdwealth.com, and you can find my phone number and email on my website.
We thank you so much for so much great information, because this is stuff people really do need to address. I will be talking with you again in 2 weeks, September 29th, I believe, for show number 5. This has been a fantastic series, and I'm really glad that it's available for people to listen to and share with other people. Thanks a lot. Have a great day, great weekend, and I'll talk to you again soon. I want to give a big shout out to Laura Johnson for giving me 4 different shows that have been just packed with great information. Please go to her website, hummingbirdwealth.com, and check out who she is, what she does, and what she offers. Also, go to my website, annarenault.com, find out who I am and what I'm up to. And then give a big shout out to Ginny Robertson for being my airtime sponsor. Thanks a lot for listening to Anna's Journey. I'll be back on the air on Monday with another great show with another great guest. Thanks a lot. Take care and have a great day.